Okay, we are covering today the topic of Gnevas Das. This is the parsha of Gnevas Das. I mentioned to you that I try to link, to, as far as possible, Sefer Bereishis is rich with Ben Adam L'Chavero issues. One of the reasons why I'm doing this topic at this time of year. And this is Parshas Vayetze, the parsha of Gnevas Das. Everybody is working out how to fool everybody else in the best way, in the right way. Lavan is Mr. White, who is really not Mr. White at all. The epitome of Gnevas Das appears to be one thing and actually is entirely different. And Yaakov himself, one of the purposes of him going to live with Uncle Lavan, is in order to take on his new assumed role of Esav, which he took upon himself in last week's Parsha, as well as now he has a split character of Yaakov and Esav, so he has to learn how to be an Esav in the world. He can no longer be an Ish Yoshev Oyelim, he has to be an Ish Asadeh. Therefore he has to learn also a little bit of how to deal with people who are going Vedas. And we see Yaakov himself is going Vedas here in this week's Parsha. We'll see the Posik in a minute. Now, have a look, please, at the very beginning, and we'll see how the sugya develops. There is a pasuk in Vayikra, in Kedoshim, Loi Tignoivu, or Loi Tignoivu, I should say. Loi Tignoivu. Do not steal. Seems very straightforward. Then, Veloi Techachashu, Veloi Techakaru, Ish Ve'amitoi. And do not deny a claim, and do not lie, each to their fellow man. Now, it seems this expression, ish ba'amitai, is usually a bit of a code word between Jews and Jews. Amitai means your fellow countrymen, and many of the Bein Adam L'Chaveru mitzvahs apply specifically between Jews and Jews. It sounds like this pasuk is indeed one of that set. Stealing, lying, denying claims is a mitzvah between Jews and Jews. However, we will see, almost immediately, that is not the case. And Loi Tignoivu, the prohibition on stealing, applies between Jews and non-Jews. It applies in a universal way. And the question is, how? How can it do so when the Pasuk seems to indicate that it is only an interpersonal Jewish mitzvah? We will get to that when we get there. But for now, let's understand, Loi Tignoivu means not to steal. Now, obviously this includes stealing money. That is the most basic form of stealing. There are, of course, two words for stealing, Gneva and Gezela. The principal difference between them, there are a number of differences between them, that a Gneva tends to be more sly and less open, and Gezela tends to be more brazen and open. This, of course, is a Gneva. And we see that Gneva comes in various different guises. There's obviously stealing people's money and causing them loss, but there's also stealing people's understanding. And in the words of the Psukim, this is called Gnevat Halev. Have a look in number two. Vayas Avshalom Kedavar Hazeh. Avshalom had a strategy to appear to be someone that he really was not. He went up and he pretended to be Mr. Loyal son of the king. When people came up to David HaMelech for Mishpat. However, all the time, v'yiganev Avshalom eslev anshei Yisrael. He was all the time stealing their lave. The lave, of course, is the essence, the heart of a person, and means their mind. The word lave in Tanakh clearly means mind. It doesn't mean heart. I wonder if you'd have gone back 3,000 years and said to someone, please point to your lave. I wonder whether they'd have actually pointed here or pointed there. It's not clear. The word lave means the essence of the person. B'chol levavcha doesn't mean in your heart. It means in your mind. These things should be constantly on your mind. Yavshalom would steal the minds of other people. We'll see exactly what that means as well. Similarly, number three, Vayignoiv Yaakov es lev Lavan. In this week's Parsha, Yaakov steals the heart of Lavan, Harami. Albeli higid loy kibor elchu. He didn't tell him that he was actually running. He was taking his family. He made out that he was happy and he was staying and he was not going anywhere. However, really, he was plotting and planning to take that away. Now, of course, you could ask me, Gnevas Halev is deceitful. How could Yaakov do this? We addressed this last week. We talked about what happens when you have to deal with cheaters and the levels of Emes and Sheker and how that works. Lavan was the supreme cheater, and Yaakov had to some degree, deal with that on Lavan's own terms. I'm not getting into that again. Chazal took this idea that we find in the Pesukim of Gnevas Halev, and they coined a new phrase which is Gnevas Das. Now, Gnevas Das doesn't mean, of course, copyright issues. There is a separate issue of copyright, of stealing other people's ideas. That's not what we're talking about today. It means pretending to be someone that you're not, and giving someone the impression in their mind this such and such is the case, where actually that is just a fraud, that is not the case at all. And Chazal talked about Shiv'a Gnavim in number 4. There are 7 Gnavim, 7 levels of Gnavim. Harishon Sheb Gnavim. The worst of all Gnavim is Gnev Das Habrias, is Gnevas Das, which is interesting, because you would have thought maybe someone who breaks into the bank and steals $1 million in the middle of the night, that's more serious. Chazal seems to be saying, no, actually, Gnevas Das is viewed in the most serious way, and we'll see at the end of the Shir Be'ezrat Hashem, hashkafically, why that should be the case. And the example that Gemara gives is very interesting. Hamasarev, I'm at the end of number 4, Hamasarev l'chaveira l'orchai, someone who presses their friend to eat with them, Vain believable lekroiso, but really has no intention of inviting them. You invite people consciously to appear hospitable. You only ever invite them when you know that they can't come or you know that they won't come. And the whole thing is just designed to make you appear to be Mr. or Mrs. Hospitable, but really it's all a fraud. It's not happening. You know, there are some people who have seen all your life scenes and think, oh, you must come round. You must come round. And I don't know, somehow you never end up coming round. This is, if it's pressing, now we'll see, there is a line between politeness. Obviously it's right to be polite. There are things that one says even when one doesn't mean them 100%, because they oil the wheels of civility. But there's a difference between that and pressing somebody and really giving an impression. It does normally. Here I'm sure it means to press. I also thought that when I was reading it. This is how it's understood. It means to pressure somebody to come around, and actually you're not going to have them round. 5, 6, or 7, I'm not going to get into now. If we have time at the end, which we probably won't, I will look at these, which this is a debate as to what's the right term, what's the rabbonon, the smag and the smack. Have a machloikas here. The smag, say for Mrs. Agadol of Rosie. Yes.
Act of somebody the way he is in Navarre.
Right. We'll talk about Echabaleg, Echabapeh. We'll talk about how that works. The smag understands that the mitzvah of Gnevas Das, the Issa of Gnevas Das, is an Issa Doraisa on the same level as stealing people's money, maybe even on a higher level, because we saw in number 4, the Mechilta says it's the Rishon Sheba Gnavim. The Smak understands that actually Gnevas Hamomen is Doraisa, but Gnevas Das is Dorabonon. The Shulchan Acharav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, wants to make a Pshara and say actually it's Doraisa if you cause people loss, even with Gnevas Das, but if you just mislead them in a non-loss way, it's Dorabonon. Everybody agrees it's Osa. And according to many, it's a full Doraisa, and a very serious one at that. Now, let's see if we can give a bit of structure to this whole sugya. Turn, please, to page 2. The discussion in the Mishnah, which really deals with Gnevas Das, is as follows. The Mishnah wants to know the answer to the following question. Are you allowed to sell non-kosher meat to non-Jewish people? That's the question the Mishnah wants to address. And he says like this, number 8. What's that? Are you allowed to sell non... We'll see. Okay, number 8. Is everything all right? Are you allowed to sell or to send non-kosher meat to non-Jewish people? Says the mission like this, number 8. Sholech Adam Yerech La'ovid Kachadim. You can sell the leg of an animal. To a non-Jew, as long as the gidan asher is in it, because it's visible, because they can see when they receive it, the non-Jew will see, Jews don't normally sell legs of meat like that, and usually Jews take out the gidan asher. Once you've taken out the gidan asher, it looks as though it's been a little bit hacked to pieces. Clearly this piece of meat, which is beautiful, leg of an animal, is in its pristine non-kosher form. You can send that to the non-Jew, that's no problem. The implication, of course, is if you send it chopped up, or if you send it in a way which is not clear, you can't send it to the non-Jew. You can't send the non-kosher meat to the non-Jew. And the question is, why not? What difference does it make to him? He doesn't have to keep kosher, so let him eat non-kosher meat. So the Gemara wants to suggest maybe he'll sell it on to a Jew, and that's the problem. But actually, the Gemara goes on to another explanation, which is Gnevas Das. Look at number 9. It says the Gemara this: Mishum de kaganiv lei ledase, because you are deceiving. You're deceiving the non-Jew. You're deceiving him because he thinks he's getting kosher food, and actually he's getting trefa food. What difference does it make to him? It seems very clear that there are have always been, and there still are, non-Jewish people who like to eat kosher. They like to buy kosher food. There's a significant market in America of people who buy kosher because they think it's fresh, they think it's clean, they think it's healthy and organic, they think it's whatever, low cholesterol. I don't break it to them that it's not always low cholesterol because it's kosher. But there are people who want to eat kosher. And if you serve them non-kosher and they think it's kosher, that's Gnevas Das. By the way, you see very clearly here immediately that Gnevas Das applies between Jews and non-Jews alike. The Tanya Hai Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir, sorry, I missed a little bit, the Amos Shmuel on the first line, Osa Lignoiv Das Habriyas, you cannot deceive anybody. You certainly can't deceive anybody, not a Jew, not a non-Jew. We'll see the Rambam says Jews and non-Jews are equal in terms of this mitzvah. And then we have a long list now in the Gemara of different cases which will explain and enlighten us on Gnevas Das. Tanya, Hai Rabbi Meir Omer. We had that case before. Don't press people to eat with you when you know that they're not going to come. And similarly, don't try press gifts onto them when you know that they won't accept the gifts. The only reason you're offering it is in the hope that it won't be accepted, because you know you want to appear hospitable or generous in this case, and you know that it's all really a sham. This is an interesting now case. Don't open a barrel of wine, which is really sold to the shop, unless you tell the person what you're doing. Let me explain this case. A barrel of wine is very expensive. Opening a new barrel of wine is a very significant cost, because you open the barrel, that's it. It's open now, you have to drink it. If you don't drink it, it'll go off. To open up a new barrel in your honor is a very significant covet. So what this person does is like this. You come to the house, and he says, you know, such a joy to have you here, such an honor, let's open a new barrel. And really, he's already sold this barrel to the shop down the road. He's opening it anyway in an hour from now. But he thinks, you know, why not? If I'm opening it anyway, why not make you feel good? You know, you can feel I'm opening it for you. No loss to me, because I'm opening it anyway. Osa Gnevas Das, Elaim Kein Haidio. You have to explain to them, you have to tell them, actually, you know, the context here is I'm opening a barrel of wine anyway. Let's share it together. If I'm opening it anyway, why not? And there are many, many applications of this. There are many examples you can think of. Let me give you just a random example. Let's say I was coming out at the end of the shir, and one of you said to me, Rabbi Manning, the emergency's come up. I need to be in Talpiot, and I need to be there in 20 minutes. It's really important. Is there any way you can give me a ride to Talpiot? I happen to be going, let's say, to Talpiot anyway. I just happen to be going there. I don't normally go there, but today I am. So if I turn around to you and say, well, you know, it's a beyond, you know. All right, if it's an emergency, I'll take you. Come, jump in the car. Are you sure? And no, it's really fine. It's really no problem. I'll take you anyway. That is pure and simple Gnevas Das, Osamid Midoraita, probably. If I turn around and said to them, look, you know, Hashgacha Pratit, it works out. I'm going anyway. Jump in. It's fantastic. It works out for both of us. So they won't feel any worse, and you won't be denying or deceiving anybody. And therefore, that's the example that you're doing someone a good turn, you didn't lose out. Why try and lie on the back of that? Someone, my Rav in London, had an example of this that happened to him. Very interesting case. He was at a meeting at somebody's house, and they offered him a drink of whiskey. Have a little whiskey. He said, okay, little one, I'm not such a big drinker. Just pour a little bit. So this guy goes to the cupboard. He gets out a bottle, beautiful bottle of $300-$400 whiskey, a bottle. Really old, serious stuff. And he starts to pour it out for the Rav. And he said, oh no, really, don't give me this. Really, it's wasted on me. I'm not a drinker. Save it for someone who can appreciate it. And the guy looks, and the balabos looks at him and says to him, you know, Rabbi, actually, I've been meaning to ask a Rabbi Shaila about this. So he said, really? What's the Shaila? So he says, someone gave me this bottle of whiskey years ago, and I just fill it up with cheap whiskey from the supermarket. I serve it to people, and they go, psh. They say, oh, yeah, serious whiskey. So he said to the rabbi, and the rabbi is astounded. He said, like, you've been doing this Gnevas Das Habriyas for the last however many years? And he says, yeah, and Rabbi, I've got a serious shaila about this. I've been meaning to ask someone. I'm feeling a bit bad about this. So the rabbi's thinking, yeah, you certainly have a shaila. But what was his shaila? Get into the head of a frum balabos. His shaila was, do I need to do tefillas kalim on the bottle if I'm reusing it? Now, that's a good shaila. That's a good shaila. That's a nice shaila. And he has to get to the bottom of that shaila too. But on a scale of 1 to 10 compared to the Gnevas Das involved, it never even occurred to him there was a Gnevas Das involved. He didn't even think about it. Because it just wasn't on his radar screen. You see, Because I'll tell you why. Look at Rashi. Look at the next Rashi. Look at the next 7 words. It says Rashi, Mipnei Shegoinev Libo, you're deceiving him, Lahachsik Loi Tovachin, because now he feels that he owes you one. And then when you go round to his house, he'll think, well, what can I do? You know, he gave me the $300 whiskey, I can't give him something less than that. Let me give you another example. Someone invites you to a wedding in Bnei Brak, and you wouldn't really make the effort to go. It's someone you know a little bit, the invitation goes up. You happen to be in Bnei Brak for a meeting, to see somebody, whatever. So while you're there, you go into the wedding, and they say, oh, I can't believe you came to the wedding. It's so nice of you to come to the wedding. It's very amazing. There's a real potential Gneva Das. You can say to them, what's that? Except if you said to them, it's fantastic, it worked out wonderfully, I was here for a meeting, it was wonderful to be able to be here. They're going to get insulted at that. You don't have to say to them, well, I have no intention of coming, but I had a meeting, you know. There's a way to say it. It's nice that they think that, but then next week, when you invite them to your wedding, and they don't want to come, they're going to say, how can I not go to their wedding when they came specially to my wedding? And it's not true. I had this at a Shiva house recently. I went to Beit Shemesh for a Shiva house to someone, and it was Friday morning. I was very busy. It really, in all honesty, is not somewhere that I would have made the effort to go on a Friday morning to the Shiva, but I was there. I was there because my sister-in-law lives around the corner. I was there anyway. I went to the Shiva. He was very grateful, and I didn't feel at the Shiva it was worth making a whole song and dance about it. But the next week when I saw him, I said, I'm sorry you were sitting Shiva. It was nice to see you. You should know I was there anyway, and it was good that I was able to come. And I don't think he was insulted. He didn't say anything, and I felt that was the right way to do it. And this is the case. And this is, again, we're dealing with Doraisas here, at least according to the Smag, and serious Yisurim according to everybody. Let's go on in the case. Lo yama lo soich shemen mipach reikan. Don't offer someone to a perfume or something from a bottle that's really empty. Again, it's not, you're hoping that they're not going to take it because there's nothing there. Ve'im bishvil kvoidai, but if it's for their covered mutter. Meaning, you're not trying to make yourself look good, but you're doing it because they deserve the covered. Let me give you an example where I think this would be appropriate. Let's say you're hosting a dinner for, you know, a lot of people, and there's a top table of special guests, VIPs, and then unexpectedly somebody else, some other senior rabbi, whoever it is, walks in. You didn't expect them, you don't have a place for them, and you say to them, oh, if you're here, please will you sit on the top table. You're sitting on the and you're hoping he'll say no, because you haven't got room on the top table. It's going to give you a headache if he says yes. But you're not saying that to make him think that you're as hospitable. You say it because he really deserves it for his covered, but really, you're really hoping that he won't go because it's awkward. There's no deception. You're just doing it pure and simple, purely and simply to help them, to give them the cover that they deserve anyway, and that's mutter. So the Gemara says, Aini, is this the case? Really? It's talking about the barrel of wine. Ha'ula ikla la Rav Yehuda. Nebei Rav Yehuda, Ula once went to Rav Yehuda's house, patach lo chavius, and he opened up a barrel, ha'machuris lachemini, which was sold to a shop. How could he do that? Gnevas das. Says the Gemara, no, idea. He told him, the case was he told him, like we said. V'boys Eimer, or alternatively, Shani Ula, maybe that's different. D'chaviv Leila Rav Yehuda, because he was, Rav Yehuda liked Ula so much, d'belav hachinami petuchim yitzachle, he would have opened one anyway. So the fact that he happened to be opening it for the shop is neither here nor there. I would have opened one for you anyway, so the fact that I had other agendas, I'm not deceiving you, because I would have opened one for you anyway. Let's go on. Tan Rabban. Lo yelech adam lebeis ha'evel, don't go to a shiva house, ubiyada lugin, and there's a bottle of wine. They used to give wine to avelim, it's an Indian to give wine to the avelim to relax them. It says like this, you don't bring a bottle of wine, hamid kash keshesh, which is actually empty. You walk in with a bottle of wine, which is actually an empty bottle of wine, because you want them to feel you came empty-handed, but actually you did come empty-handed. But lo yimalenu mayim, don't fill it up with water. Again, mipnei shemetah, you're deceiving them. Vim yesham chaveh ha'ir, but if, again, there's someone who is, it's for their covered, Mutter says, Rashi the God will cover the bris. I don't want to get into that so much. Let's go on to the next case. Tan Rabbanan. Now we deal with questions of sales. Excuse me? He's allowed because, again, I'm doing it not because I wish to appear something, but I'm doing it because I want people to feel that you're choshev. I mean, people should see that people give you things and bring you things because that's your position. Again, it's focused on you. It's not focused on me. I don't want you to feel that you owe me a favor. It's a thin line. Oh, yes, it's a thin line. We'll see many examples I've brought at the back. Tan Rabbanan. Lo yimkar adam lechaveiro sandal. Now we're dealing with sales, which is very interesting. Don't sell a sandal. to someone. Shel Mesa, which is made from a dead animal. Now, every sandal, as far as I'm aware, is made from a dead animal. You wouldn't want to wear a live one. But the point here is, Shel Mesa, it's a dead animal that fell down dead. It's a sick old animal. Bichlal, on the basis, Shel Chaya Shulta, that it's a nice, healthy, live animal, it's reshefted. They think they're buying sandals made of high quality leather, and they're buying sandals made of low quality leather. Mipnei Beis Dvorim, two reasons. Aleph Mipnei Shematau, one, you're deceiving them. They think they're getting this, and it's fraud. It's a fake. It's the equivalent. It's the old equivalent of... Oh, there's also an issue of price. Now, then it isn't necessarily... Let me give you an example. And let's say you're selling fake Nike sneakers. And Nike sneakers retail for, let's say, for $100. And you're selling fakes for $50 or $75. Now, it may well be that... And they say Nike on them, but they're fakes. And the guy thinks he's really buying Nike. It may well be that the sneakers he's buying really are worth $75. And he's paying $75 for a $75 sneaker, which is not stealing his money at all. What you're stealing is the idea that he thinks that he's getting a Nike sneaker when he's not getting a Nike sneaker. We're going to have to address the question, which we will do in a few minutes, which is what happens if you're selling Nike sneakers special offer for $5 or $10? Are you responsible for people who make unreasonable assumptions? The Gemara is going to come on to define that. Oh, that's also awesome. Maybe you should realize that. So two reasons with the sandal. One is the deception, and who knows whether the leather's diseased even. You can't do that. And finally, and this is really out and out theft at the end, don't send someone a barrel of wine, v'shemen tzafal pia, but there's oil on the top, meaning they open it up, they look, and they think they're buying oil because the oil is the top level, and actually underneath, you know, it's like when you go to the shuk and you buy the nice quality looking stuff, and you say, I'll have a pound of this or whatever, and underneath there's all the other stuff which you know, you get there. That's the Geneva. And the Gemara brings the salutary tale at the end. There was one fellow, he sold someone a barrel of wine, and there was actually oil on the top. He thought he was buying oil. He invited guests on the basis he had all this lovely oil. They all came to the party. They found it was actually yayin. He had nothing to give them. He committed suicide. He was so embarrassed. Now, obviously, the guy was fairly, you know, on the edge. But the Gemara is saying, you never know how you're going to find people, and deceiving them and lying to them, you can never tell whether the person is actually on the edge, and you just push them off the edge because of the deceit that you figured on them. Now, the Gemara is going to go on to discuss this issue of... Thank you very much indeed. No problem. Let's just pause for a second while I give these out, because... Okay. The Ritva addresses the issue as to how does this apply between Jews and non-Jews when it says Ish Ba'amitoy. This big mitzvah of deceiving people, and he raises an interesting point here. And he makes a couple of suggestions, but one of them I thought was most interesting. He says, he points out, if you look again at source number one, just flip back for a second to source number one, you'll see that underneath the nun of loisig noivu is an etnachta. An etnachta, the Torah of course has no punctuation. The punctuation is supplied by the ta'amim, by the notes. And therefore if you sing the wrong notes, you're punctuating the psukim wrongly. Bali Kriya, if they're good, they're very makrid on this, that they make sure that they sing the right notes, because otherwise the psukim don't make any sense. As you know very well, in English as well, it could be that you say something which is the same words, but with the punctuation, for example, let's eat grandma, as opposed to let's eat grandma. There is a world of difference. So it says the Ritva, loy signoivu. It's loy signoivu. Rest. Loy signoivu is on its own. And then, v'loy sechakashu v'loy tshakru, ish ba'amitoy. So the loisach hakashu v'loisach shakru, they are qualified by ish ba'amitoy. The loisach noivu stands on its own. The Ritva is saying an amazing thing, that if you don't sing the right notes, then you'll learn the wrong halachas. There's a halacha d'oraisa of loisach noivu, which if you just punctuated the psukim wrongly, then you would have got that wrong. So you see here the chashivas, the importance of the ta'amim, because otherwise there are real halachic issues that can arise. Let's have a look at source number 11. Because 11 is really the question that I was dealing with before. This takes us to the really into the heart of the sugya. So I'm responsible for people's mistaken ideas. I can't deceive people. How far does that responsibility go? If I do things which other people assume unreasonable things about, is that really my responsibility? Do I really have to tell you? Okay, if I turn up at your wedding in Bnei Brak and you think I came from Yerushalayim specially, okay, fine. But if I happen to turn up at your wedding in Chicago and you had no idea I was going to come and you turn around and say, I can't believe you came from Yerushalayim to Chicago, especially for my wedding, am I required to turn around and say, well, actually, I don't want to deceive you, or is there something slightly wrong with the way you view the world, which maybe I'm not responsible for? The Gemara is addressing this question. Look at number 11. Heichem machriz. Fine, I'm a butcher, I have non-kosher meat, I want to sell it to a non-Jewish crowd. And this can happen. A kosher butcher can end up with a cow that's treif, or even parts of the cow that he can't sell to Jews. He doesn't want to throw them away, he wants to sell them. This happens all the time. In the abattoirs, they sell parts of the cows to non-Jewish slaughterhouses, whatever. And how is he going to advertise? Heichem machriz. Our Rav Yitzchak by Yosef, this is what he puts on the sign. Nafal bisra lebnei chayla. Meat available for the chayalim. The army, with the non-Jewish people, they would come in the army through the town. They were the non-Jews in town. Meat available for non-Jews here. Okay? Says the Gemara of the labor, surely you should say, Nafal treifasa lebnei chayla. Surely you should say, make it clear, it's treif meat available for non-Jews here. Says the Gemara, loy zavni, they're not going to buy it. And who wants to read the meat's treif? They're not going to buy that. They want to have what they think is good quality meat. Even though, of course, there's nothing wrong with it. I have to be able to sell my products. It's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara is telling me, okay, I've got to keep the halacha, but I've got to be able to sell my products. I have to be able to advertise. So the Gemara says, but otherwise you'd be fooling them. You can't leave out the word treif. And the Gemara concludes, no, actually, inu dikamatayu nashai. They would only be fooling themselves. And therefore I can write on the sign, meat available for non-Jews. And if they think it's kosher, that's their problem. And the question is, why is that different from the other cases we've discussed where I have to go out of my way to make sure that I'm not deceiving you? Here it seems it's their problem. The Gemara brings a proof. He had a Marazutra, a rather comical case. Marazutra was coming on the road, raid Rav Nachman. Marazutra, the son of Rav Nachman, was coming. He was going from town A to town B, from Sichra to Bein Mechuza. And Rav and Rav Safra, two other rabbis, were heading in the opposite direction. And they met up in the middle of the road. Pago Hadadi. Now, of course, Marazutra was a visiting guest rabbi for Shabbos, whatever he was in this town. He assumed that they were the reception committee. They'd come to meet him. Who savar? He thought, says the Gemara, la'apehu dekasu, that they'd come to see him. And of course, now he launches into a whole rhetoric. Amalu, he says to them, la'malu rabban litro chasvahasukul lahai, you didn't have to make all this trouble, you didn't have to come here, you didn't have to do this, it's so nice of you, your town's obviously so hospitable, and he's going on with this. And they're, of course, facing a real dilemma. What do they say to him? Do they say to him, of course, you think we'd let you come into town unaccompanied? Do they say to him, well, we didn't know, and he's going to look like a real fool because he's just been saying this? I often give a contemporary example. Let's say you're having friends around for dinner. Friends for dinner, and you come out with dessert, and you bring out a large chocolate cake, walking out of the kitchen, and one of your friends says, oh, I can't believe you remembered my birthday. That's so sweet. And you're standing with a chocolate cake. And you're thinking, like, what do I go? Like, happy birthday. What do I do? Do I tell you? Do I not tell you? So the Gemara says like this. So look at what happened. Amalei Rav Safra, who was very well known for being very, very straight. Very, very straight throughout in Yashrus, in Mominus. He said to him, Anan loy havi yadina nikasima. We actually did not know that you were coming. I want to be straight honest with you. I havi yadina, if we had known, we would have done even more for you, but I don't want you to think that we came to meet you, because we didn't come to meet you. So of course then he felt very foolish. Amalei Rava. Rava turns around to Rav Safra, who just said this, and said, my time, Atrele Hachi, why did you have to say that to him? The Achlish Deladaite, look, you've upset him. You had to say that? You have to be so honest the whole time? Very interesting discussion. Amalei, he said to Rava, the Hakamatai, to Kaininale, we would have been deceiving him. We can't deceive him. To which Rava answered, no, ihu kematai nafshe. He would have only been deceiving himself. That's his problem. If he wants to think that we came to meet him, let him think. Why did you have to upset him? It wasn't the right thing to do. Right. Right. In other words, they
would.
Right. It's interesting. I wonder whether, because that's not the answer the Gemara gives. The Gemara doesn't say, well, we would have done that anyway. The other case was for kavod. Maybe there was. No, that we talked about that last week. That was already lying for Shalom Bayis. Okay. There may be an element that we don't want to embarrass him, we don't want to upset him. The question is, am I allowed to steal from people and really deceive them, even if that's at the cost of not upsetting them? In other words, can I do something which actually makes them think better of me when it's really not true? It is an important person. It's a good question. Correct. It's a good question. Clearly, Rav Safra and Rava both felt that that wasn't a heter here. Rava felt there was another heter, which was that he was just fooling himself. He was coming to ridiculous conclusions. That's not my problem. Rav Safra evidently felt that he had to tell him. Maybe they were, I don't know, I need to look into it. Maybe they were concerned that he really would feel that he owed them specifically a favor, and it's not the case. But it's a good question. It's a better question than my answer. Yes?
I would think that it's a matter of the norm of the place. If a person,
right.
This is what is expected, then I would be insulting him to come and tell him the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but truth.
Right.
However, if it's someone that feels self-important, then that isn't coming.
So your answer actually is going to be very similar to what we see Tosfos was saying in a few minutes. So you're obviously in spec. I was wondering maybe an answer to your question could be, maybe there would be a heter of kavod. You're right, maybe there would be a heter not to tell him because of kavod. But maybe the Gemara is teaching an extra chiddush, which is, you don't even need to come on to the heter of kavod. Even if there was no heter of kavod, this scenario is not one which I'm responsible in any way for what he's thinking, because he's only fooling himself. I don't know. It could be the robber could have answered. Well, to be covered him, you know, we can let him think that. He didn't answer that because there's a deeper chiddush being taught here. Yes. Right. Well, in other words, he would have found out eventually. He would have discovered in about 15 seconds that maybe. So maybe they would have felt they had to walk back. You're right. It seems from the context of the Gemara that he wouldn't have found out. It's like they would have walked him back. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been deceiving him, because they'd have said goodbye and they'd have walked on and he'd have looked at them and said, what's this? Yes?
I think if you go to the Kibbutz of Rashi, what's the problem? In other words, what might this lead to?
Right.
He already says, had we known you were coming, we would have come. So in other words, he's acknowledging that this is something would be appropriate. So the worst that could happen is if they were coming to his town, he would come to greet them, which he probably would do anyway.
Right.
So it's not like they're going to get something extra, or that he could put them under a certain obligation.
So why is Rav Safra so concerned that they'd be deceiving him? Because he's extra. He's like Nimishur Sadin. That's Rav Safra Lushitasa, because he's very strict. I think it's Rav Safra that they tell the mice in the Gemara when he was sitting in the shop saying Kriya Shema, and somebody came in and made him an offer for something, and he didn't answer because he was saying Kriya Shema, and they thought he was playing the bargaining game, so they kept putting the money up and up and up and up and up, and at the end of the day, he turned around to them and says, I'm only going to take the money that you first offered, because in my mind I decided to accept that, even though la halacha that was not required, because Dvarim Shevalev Einam Dvarim. I think that was also Rav Safra. So it could be this is Rav Safra Lishitato, he goes extra. But the truth is, going extra sometimes is not so straightforward. Rava said to him, in this particular case, it was unnecessary and maybe even damaging because you upset him. Have a look at the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Look at 12 and 13. There's a fundamental Machlokas on the whole sugya, which is that Rashi Shita is, they're all trying to work out with these cases, why in sometimes I have to tell you and sometimes I can let you come to your own conclusions. Rashi's approach is, it all depends whether I actively misled you. If I spoke and misled you, that's called Gneivas Daat. But if I kept shtum, if I kept quiet, and you jumped to conclusions, well, that's your problem. That's Rashi's approach. Look at number 12. Inukik matai nafshayihu. This is in the case of the meat. Deloi mashayili. They never asked, e trefa, e kashera. They never said, is it trefa, is it kosher? So therefore, I never said anything, so they're fooling themselves. V'haydi ketani le'elam. When it says above with the barrel of wine, mitneishem etau b'moicheloi. Sorry, this is with the sandals. I'm sorry that he's fooling him. Is b'moicheloi b'cheska shchuta. It's where he sells sandals in a situation where everybody sells healthy, good quality leather. And therefore, it's obvious that he was almost representing that it was good quality because of the nature of the market transaction. V'chein ha'poisei chavios, and similarly, when he opened the barrel of wine, ha'mechurus lechemenu, which is really sold to a shop, Rashi's understanding of the case there is, da'aymeloi, it's when he said to him, bishmilcha ani potcha, I'm doing it for you. The vada going of das, that's gneivas das, says Rashi. When I'm either telling you or it's obvious because that's always the way it's done with the, like in the sandal shchuta. So that's when it's gneivas das. Similarly here with Rav Safra, ihu de mekayot tayanav shei, he's only fooling himself. Says Rashi, achre sha'anu loy amarnu, we never said loy to him likras chayatzana that we came to meet you. Rashi's position seems to be, if I just keep quiet, let you think whatever you like. Once I actually start saying things to you, that's when Gnevas Das kicks in. Tosfos does not like that. Tosfos says no. Sometimes you can even be deceiving people by keeping quiet. And the cases of the Gemara don't sound like the way the Rashi is describing them. Have a look at Tosfos number 13. Right. Kishtikaho ka'adeya, in some sense, tika itself is a communication. They are only fooling themselves, says Tosfos. Lekach nira, it seems to me the hasam there in the case of the wine, bestam, it's not a case where I told you I was doing it for you. It's stam, I just gave you the wine. V'asam, it's still asa, mishum de'ein lo'oreach la'asuki adaisi. Because there was no reason for the guest to think to himself, de'muchurus lechenveni, that maybe it's been sold on to the chenveni. But here in the case of the meat, they should have realized the treifahu, that the meat was treif. And similarly, Mazutra, he should have realized that I say in his mind, Tosfos seems to be saying, almost like speaking as a lawyer, a reasonableness case, a reasonableness requirement, meaning that it's not what I say that matters, is should this person reasonably come to the conclusion of X, whereas actually I've allowed that conclusion to be reached where really it's Y. It's reasonable for people to think that if I give you a bottle of wine, then I'm opening it for you. Why would they even think that I'd opened it to sell it to a shop? However, if I put a sign on my business saying, meat here, available for non-Jews, and it's a kosher butcher, like, what are they thinking? What are they thinking? Well, why does it say non-Jews? So they think it's a special deal for non-Jews that I like this week to serve them. That's not reasonable. Similarly, Mazutra, when he's walking down the street, and so he bumps into, you think when you bump into people on the street that they're a reception committee? That's reasonable to think that. It's not reasonable to think that. Therefore, Tosfos's test seems to be a reasonableness test. It may be in the birthday cake case. Maybe it depends on the scenario. Maybe if it's just some slight acquaintance, some random person that you invited around and they think that you knew their birthday. So, okay, fine. Why should they think such a thing? Let them think that. Happy birthday, whatever. You know, good evening. But if it's somebody that maybe you should have known their birthday. Maybe if it's your sister or if it's like this or a grand, your husband. Maybe there's a real Gnevas Das there. Maybe that. And then you come on to Shalom Bayis issues. Which... Then you for sure have to. Although, you know something, as we said last week, Shalom Bayis, the heter of life for Shalom Bayis, is not to get you off the hook. That's not the heter. Shalom Bayis means lying in order to bring Shalom Bayis between other people. If you've done something inappropriate and you feel you have to lie to avoid an argument, that's just doing another inappropriate thing to cover up the first inappropriate thing. Maybe there's a way of doing it which is less damaging than another way, but that maybe depends on the circumstances. Yes. Yes.
If you're buying a daughter, a granddaughter, a gift, a gold,
right.
You want to give the birthday, whatever it is. And gold is very, very supply now. You're going to buy something gold too.
Okay.
So you have an obligation to say that when you give them the gift,
I don't think so. There's an assumption that it's for when you give a granddaughter a gift, a granddaughter thinks that, well, my grandmother would never buy me anything but gold. Some granddaughters, maybe. I think. I'm not sure. I think it depends on your grandchildren. Let's say it was a wedding ring. I think it would clearly be an assumption if you give someone a wedding ring, which is a fake wedding ring, because there clearly the understanding, its expectation is that it's gold, and you're almost representing that it is gold by giving them a wedding ring. Leaving aside the issues of how that affects the kiddushin, if you give someone a fake ring which is not gold, etc. But to give to, you know, somebody gave my son once, a relative gave my son, they came from Hong Kong, they gave him a Rolex watch. A Rolex watch. And it's beautiful Rolex, diamond studded Rolex watch. So, yeah. So, there's a Geneva's Dasa. My grandson thinks that, you know, a Rolex watch costs $8,000, whatever it costs. This costs about 50 cents. And, I'm not sure there's really a Geneva's Das there. He had a problem. He didn't know whether to wear it to school. He's going to go, he's in like Kita Dalit there. He's going to walk in with his Rolex watch on. So he didn't want to do that. He felt it was not appropriate. But I'm not sure for a grandchild, if they think that the grandparent only buys them real diamonds. I'm not sure. It depends on the scenario. Maybe if you're living in Beverly Hills or something like that and it's a different society, tuck. But I'm not sure. Yerushalayim, I'm not sure. Yeah. Hallmarks. In other words, if they knew it was Hallmark, they see it's Hallmarks or not Hallmarks. That's a good point. If your grandchildren know about Hallmarks already. Okay. Yeah.
If I want to complete
it,
my sister,
yeah.
I have to have the
oh, very good. Good. So they bring this down as a case of Geneva stuff. Going to look in a store when you're not really intending to buy. So there's different cases. There are different scenarios. Number one, many people walk into shops without any intention to buy, and the shops are very happy because they change people's minds. That's their job. They're salespeople. They know that you walk in saying, I'm not here to buy anything, I'm just here to look at the prices. That's fine. They're absolutely happy with that because there's a challenge for them that get you to buy something. That's quite different from a case where you're going into a store with really no intention. Let's say you're working for the competitor, and you're just trying to work out what everybody's charging, and you're going to spend talking to someone for half an hour to see what they know about the product. That's clearly Geneva's Das, no question. There will be cases in the middle which will be grey areas. Let's say you already bought something, and there are people who like driving themselves crazy, even though they already bought it, they go and check how much it is in other places. So is that real or is it not real? Well, there are some people that would see and they would run and they'd take it back and they change it and do this and that. So maybe even there it would be okay. It depends on the scenario. But just damn wasting someone's time when there's no possibility of you buying is Geneva's Das. But in 90% of cases there is a possibility of people buying things because window shopping, as we know, is real shopping. People end up spending a lot of money when they window shop. Yes. Right. Okay. Okay. So that you can't harm. But I think in many chanuyot, it's understood. People go around. People go. They're just looking around. And it may depend on how much of your their time you're taking. If you walk into Hamashbir and you look around, you're no good neighbor to anyone. If you go into a small business and you take half an hour of their time where explaining how this works and how that works, so that's a big investment they've made in you, and there may be a Geneva Das which is more there. Have a look, please. So Tosfos clearly says now that it depends not on what you say, but on what's reasonable. We see why Tosfos is important because the Shulchan Aruch paskens that way. You had a question?
No, I had a statement that I wanted to make about the gold sells jewelry. I think it would be more reasonable to tell the grandfather or whoever you're giving it to that it is gold fill, and they should make sure not to go into a swimming pool.
Or if they lose it,
look, certainly, okay, practical advice, certainly to tell the kid that it is gold and it's not gold, it's clearly Geneva's Das. But the question is, what's the case of stamp? Yeah. Right.
And in fact, recently I gave such to a daughter of mine one of my mother's rings.
A real gold, right.
And she says to me, oh, this is gold filled, isn't it? I said, no, this is real gold.
Right. So you maybe go the other way now.
Take care of it.
Let's go on. Let's look at the Rambam. The Rambam brings two very important halachas, number 14 and 15. Also, la'adam la'anik atzmoi b'divrei chalukos, ye chalakos. You're not allowed to be smooth honey-tongued, deceptive, or pitui, and someone who is enticing people into things. Don't be a person, he says, who's got one thing in his heart and is a hypocrite, and they're saying one thing. Mr. Lavan, classic. Okay, and a toicha kabaro. There's a halacha. It's passing in Hilchas Deos here. You have to be straightforward person. What's going on in your head has to be what comes out of your mouth. Again, within the realms of politeness and shalom bias and civility, etc. You don't have to think, you'd have to say every single thing that you think. But also lignoi das abrius afilu das anochri. He says very clearly you're not allowed to mislead people, gnevas das, whether it's Jewish or non-Jewish. Similarly, number 15, also laramos es bnei adam, you're not allowed to deceive people, but mekach umemka, in sales, and this is a very important point. Doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or non-Jewish. Shavim bedavazeh, they're equal in this. There are people in the world who like to mislead themselves into thinking that it makes a difference whether they're selling to Jews or non-Jews, and somehow this is just a deception, this is just a yetzahara, and there is no basis for it at all. If you know that there is a defect in what you're selling, you have to tell the purchaser what the defect is. A feeling of dasabris bedvarim, even just saying things which are misleading, is awesome. Now, this is an important point because in English law and other legal systems, it's not always this way. For example, selling property in English law, caveat emptor, it used to be much stronger than it is today, but it used to be very strong. The buyer beware, meaning that my obligation as a vendor in English law, if I'm selling property, is just to allow you to ask the questions. You ask me the question, certainly when it comes to defects which you could find out about. If you didn't ask the question, then I have no obligation to ask you. Now, it's a little bit different today. And I'm not getting into a law lecture here, because that's not what I'm here to do. But certainly it used to be much more the case that if they didn't ask the right questions, then you're off the hook. In halacha, that's not the case. In halacha, you have an obligation to tell people what's wrong with the thing that you're selling. Now, I had a shaila once, which I asked to one of the dayanim in London. I was selling my car. It was a third-hand, fourth-hand car. Of course, lots of things are wrong with it. I said to him, look, do I really have an obligation to write a long list of business wrong with the car? The lights flicker and the belt sticks and the brakes squeak. I said, if I write a list of everything that's wrong with this car, no one's ever going to buy it. So he said to me, if you sell the car to a person, little old lady down the road who doesn't know anything about cars, you absolutely have an obligation to tell her so she knows what's going on. But if you sell the car to a car dealership, where that's their job to understand cars, it's perfectly reasonable to expect that they would know what to look for. He says, you can just give the car to them, and you can tell them, look, this is the car, it's a third-hand car. Someone who maybe is savvy enough to maybe... A young man, maybe these days people ask the AA or the AAA or whatever to have a look at it for them, so maybe you can suggest that to them. I'll tell you what happened. I sold the car to a dealership. Traded in, there's a word for it? Like a part deal or something like that. And I got a new car for it. Anyway, on the way, driving it to trade it in, the car broke down on the highway, okay? The car broke down on the M1, if you're interested. And I couldn't believe it. The car broke down on the way to the dealership. I was saying to Hillim, I was banging the steering wheel. I was screaming and crying. I was doing it. And in the end, the car started. And I drove it to the dealership. And I turned off the engine. I gave them the keys and said, look, guys, this is an old car. You know about cars. You drive it around, you tell me what you think it's worth, and I'll be happy with that. And they said, fine, it was fine, it worked fine, it drove around. So to my knowledge, and by the way, I saw this car driving around the neighborhood for many years to come. So everything was good. Everything was good. The leaking. That's a good question. Clearly, with Geneva's roof, you ask about the leaky roof. What about problems in your house? How much do you need to... Now, clearly the case with Geneva's das, you have no obligation to... you're allowed to make things look nice in a reasonable way. For example, if you're selling your house, you're allowed to tidy it up. You don't have to leave it looking like a mess, because that's what it normally looks like. You with dirty dishes in the sink and things like that. You're allowed to, they say you should make coffee and you could bake bread and all these things. Because on the other hand, if you're painting over cracks, if you're moving cupboards to cover up damp patches and things like that, then there's a Geneva's das. You're trying to hide a mum. Okay, so then you fixed it. But then that's not a, unless it's a, it's a deeper problem. Look at the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens this particular halacha. Number 16. You're not allowed to deceive people in business, or to do any kind of gnevas das. If there is a defect in your products, we don't say caveat emptor. You have to tell people within the boundaries of what we were saying. It doesn't matter if they're Jewish or non-Jewish. You can't sell them meat, which is trade. When they think that it's kosher. The aflig noiv das habris b'dvarim, just to say things which are misleading even, shemarish ha'oise b'shvilo, you're making out you're doing it for him, ein ha'oise, they think you owe you a favor, and it's awesome. Now, he passes down to us, it's not Rashi. Ve'im hu dava she'i boi leila asukhi adasi, if it's a matter which they should, if they thought about it, she'ein ha'oise b'shvilo, they should have realized that you're not doing it for them, and they're just jumping to unreasonable conclusions, umatai atzmon, they're only fooling themselves, and they think you're doing it for them, for their covert. Kagoin, for example, he brings the case on the Gemara of Mazutra. Someone meets you in the road, and he thinks that this person, that you came out to meet them, says the Shulchan Aruch. It's his problem. And therefore, that is the halachi in Shulchan Aruch here in Choshen Mishpat. That if people come to unreasonable and realistic conclusions, that is no longer your responsibility. A couple of cases just to bring it towards a close. We've got about 10 minutes, and we'll need them. Have a look at number 17. Very interesting case that is brought down in the Mishnah about the Ari Miklat. As you well know, if somebody, God forbid, killed someone by accident, but not just by accident, they were negligent. If someone kills someone totally by accident, someone drunk sort of stumbles into the road and bumps into a car, there's no Ari Miklat for that. That's just a pure accident. But if someone was negligent, if somebody was not careful, they were manslaughter, they maybe were driving when they were drunk or something, and they killed somebody, God forbid, then they have to go to a city of refuge. So let's say a Rav has to go to a city of refuge because he did this, he was a manslaughterer. This is number 17. Kiyotzebot. Roitseach. Shegala le'ir miklat, a murderer who has to go to a city of refuge, v'ratza anshe ha'ir l'chvoido, and the people run out because he's a visiting rab, and they say, oh, Rabbi so-and-so, we've been waiting for someone like you for years, come and give us shiurim. Yoyma lehem, says the Mishnah, he must say to them, roitzeach ani, I am a murderer. Amru loy, if they say to him, afal pi kein, alright, so we're all Ritzchen here, that's where we are. I will still give you covered. Yikabel mehem. He can accept the cover, but he can't mislead people into thinking for 1 minute that he's there for this reason when he's there for this reason. That's a mission already. Similarly, the Yerushalmi says in number 18, Barnash, an individual, the Tani Chadim Michal that's learned one measure, that's learned one area, for who Abdul Asar, and he goes to a place, they're in Moikrin Lay, and they give him covered, begin on the basis Tarity, that he's learned too. In other words, you go to a place and they think you're a big time at Chacham, and you're not a big time at Chacham. So this is Tzarech Meimelo. He has to say to them, I'm not the time at Chacham you think I am. You shouldn't, God forbid, think I'm a bigger time at Chacham than I am. This is, and it's not just for modesty. This, if they want to think that you're modest, the Seder. I'll tell you a funny story. When I was a balabos in London, So I used to give a few shiurim. That's one of the reasons why I enjoyed, I decided to leave the law and become a lawyer, because I decided to give some, become a teacher, is because I felt that, look, it's something I like, people enjoyed it, etc. But I was about a boss, I learnt a little bit here and there, in yeshiva a little bit, but I had nothing special, whatever. Maybe still nothing special, but whatever. A very significant rav, called me up, I'm not going to mention who it is, and he said, I'd like you to come to my shul as a scholar in residence, as a guest, he didn't say scholar in residence, as a guest speaker for Shabbos. So I said to him, I think you must be mistaken. I said, okay, you're asking the wrong person, I'm not a rabbi. He said, are you Manning? So I said, yes. He says, well, that's the name I've got, this is your number, I want you to come and speak at my shul. So I said to him, why would you ask me to speak, I'm an Amaretz. So he said to me, good sense of humor, he said, that's exactly why I want you. He said, listen to me, he said, my balabasim are also amaratim. He says, and if you and Amaretz give them a shtickle Torah, they'll think, oh, Efshah and Amaretz can also learn a little bit of Torah. He said this word for word, what he said. He said, if I give them shiurim, they think, ah, of course, he's a rav, he knows, he went to yeshiva, what's that got to do with me? He says, I want you to give them Torah, and then they'll feel more of a, you know, his chayvus to do. And I did. I went, again, spoke to them over Shabbos. And no, I don't know, but it went very well. But that's another thing that encouraged me to go into teaching, to try and do that a little bit. Just to finish off a few things, there is also another mitzvah which I just want to mention of Oyna'ah, which is in number 19. There's a pasuk in the Torah of Aloy Sainu Ish Et Amitai. Oyna'ah is taking advantage of people, usually in financial terms, is a special mitzvah. Overcharging is a special itta doraisa, and the Sforno actually writes there, number 19, afilu b'dvarim v'kinevas das. Even oynah, when it comes to oynah dvarim, when it comes to kinevas das, that is also part of this mitzvah. So not only is there a mitzvah of not to steal, loy signoivu, or tignoivu, there may be also a mitzvah of oynah, which kicks in as well with kinevas das. I just brought you the last three sources, with a very interesting Rabbeinu Yonah on more of a hashkafic angle. Then I brought you some examples at the end. The Rabbeinu Yonah deals with the issue of why exactly do we take it so seriously when people are misleading each other through speech. People steal each other's money. That's also very serious. Why is speech worse? And he says at the end, he says, Ki hu miyaseidei hanefesh. It's one of the Yisoidei HaNefesh, is the way you speak and the way you communicate. And he gets this really from the idea that when man was created in the story of Gan Eden there, and it says in number 21, at the end of the Pasuk, Adam the Nefesh Chaya, that man became a living being. So very famously, this is well-known Torah, Unklus translates Nefesh Chaya as the Ruach Mamalala, which is a speaking being. And therefore, for us, speech is not just a means to an end. Speech itself is extremely choshev, because speech is the way the world was created, through speech, through words. Speech is the way that I get my mind into your mind, and you get your mind into my mind, and therefore abuse or misuse of the power of speech from our Jewish hashkafic perspective is very fundamental. That's why Lashon Hara is connected kulam, and that's why they point out with the Al-Khaitz and all the vidui that you say on Yom Kippur, there are very many more about what comes out of your mouth and what goes into your mouth during the year. That's really fundamental to the concept of tshuva there, and therefore this idea of speech is really very important. Just a couple of comments on the examples, and then I'll bring things to a close. We've talked about most of these. I've covered them. A couple, they're not all osa. They're not all of these are osa. Some of them are okay, but it depends on the situation. If you look here in the advertising one, in number two, advertising, of course, is a thin line. Because everybody knows that there are certain statements that everybody realizes, you know, the best in the world or the cheapest in town. You don't. Closing down sale. Every week is another closing down sale. You know, everybody realizes, okay, that's the game, that's they play. They say these are the best burgers in the world. I'm not going to get, there's no Geneva's dads there if they're not the best burgers in the world. What's that? There's nothing wrong with it. I didn't say everything is wrong here. I said some of these are issues that come up. Loss leaders are fine. You know, you have one particular product which is very cheap. However, there may be things which really are Geneva stars. For example, sometimes when people have discounts, they put price tags on the clothes with a false old price crossed out and a new price. Okay, that is clearly Geneva's dust, because you think that it used to cost $50 and now it costs $25, and actually it used to cost $35 and now it costs $25. That's clearly Geneva's dust. That's a line which has been crossed. I put here advertorials. You probably know what they are. I didn't know this because my wife is in the business and she tells me these things. Advertorials are when you see something in the paper that looks like it's actually a column written up by a journalist, but actually the whole thing's an advert. It's just advertising a product. Now, they write often now on these things, this is an advert. That's because also Geneva Stars is going through people's minds, but that has to be written there, otherwise, and stand the issue with small print. How much is the small print really misleading, and how much is it you're expected to actually find out about it? There is a thin line between Geneva's Das and reasonable advertising. I brought here, in terms of gifts, look, just in number 5, this is, it raises some very interesting questions. Giving second-hand gifts as new gifts. So, re-gifting, I think it really depends on the context. If somebody sends me Shlach Manos, exactly, that's part of the whole mitzvah of Purim. It's the parcel down the line. I think everybody realizes that if someone gives me a box of chocolates for Shabbos and I don't particularly like them and I give them to someone else next week, there's nothing wrong with that, that's fine. Because I like them doesn't mean they don't like them, that's perfectly reasonable. On the other hand, if it's a very personal gift that you're giving to somebody and they think that you went to the bother of buying it and looking for it and checking it and having it made and whatever, and it just happens to be someone at work gave you because they didn't need it and you give it to someone else, then there is a potential Geneva Stas issue. We got an engagement present. I remember my wife and I, a cookbook, which I think my wife still uses, which was very nice cookbook. It said at the front to Anthony and Sarah on the occasion of their engagement, and the very next page said like to Leonard and Sheila on the occasion of their 25th wedding anniversary. I suppose they didn't want to be over in Geneva's Das, so they left. My wife. My wife is actually a tzaddikist. It's not a big chiddush, because I said to her the other week, how come I've never seen that book? I've never seen that for the years. She says, no, we have it. I just taped that page closed because I didn't think it was nice that they wrote that we had that. We will link to them every time we did it. So, fine. So, but that maybe is not such a problem. Here, we talked about cheap whiskey in expensive bottles. People who are fooling themselves in many cases. The ride from the wedding, we talked about that. False covers. We talked about most of those. Just turn to page 5 for a second. Vows from the firm. You know, if you work for a if someone's ill in hospital, God forbid, and they work for a company, and the company sends them flowers through one of the employees, and this employee walks in with his enormous bunch of flowers. So he thinks it's from him. Does she think it's from him? Does she think it's from her? Does she think it's from the firm? You have to sort of work out the Geneva Stas issues there. Cheating, obviously, in tests is pure and simple Geneva Stas. And if you help other people to cheat, that's just Lifnei Iver. Forging certificates, qualifications, all of those. Now, on the other hand, everybody knows when they send in a resume, you want to make it look as impressive as you can. Everyone's like domestic engineering, or all these like code words that you have for, you know, you worked in a, you know, as an au pair or something. Again, there's a line between falsehood and simply presenting things right. But this at least is an issue that we have to be aware of, and it's a sugya, it's a debate, it's a real halachic doraisa. On a day-to-day level, there are inyanim that come up constantly. And therefore, even though we can't cover all of the cases, I just wanted at least to make us aware of that. I'll finish with a story, which I heard from Rav Israel Tauber. Rav Israel Tauber, who gives many shirim in the States, he's been involved in business many times in his own life, as well as giving shirim. He told me the following story, and with this I'll finish. He said there was a fellow in New York or in North America somewhere who was becoming a bit of a Baal Tshuva, and he was getting more involved, and he went to a shiur by a rav, like one of these lunch and learn shiurim in the city, where the rav gave a shiur about Geneva Stas. And the rav said to him, look, even though the law of the land might say caveat emptor, the halacha, a person has to reveal defects, you can't just hide them. So this person came up to the rav afterwards and says, are you telling me that if I sell property, I have to tell other people what's wrong with it? So he says, well, yes, that's the halacha. So he says, Rabbi, this is very problematic for me. I'm a property dealer, and let me tell you what happened to me. I bought a property about 3 or 4 years ago, and there was a crack in the basement, and it floods. And I never found out about it, and I'm stuck with this thing. Every time I put it on the market, caveat emptor, I never mention it, but people keep asking questions. Are there inquiries? Are there cracks? Are there defects? And of course, once they ask the question, I have to tell them. And every time the sale falls through because nobody ever wants to buy it. He says, finally, I exchanged contracts with somebody. They never asked. I never said. And they're going to buy the building. Are you telling me that I have to let them know that there's a crack in the basement? This is going to cost me millions. So the Rav said to him, look, you have to let them know, but you just have to pick the right moment. You have to let them know, though, but you can pick the moment that suits you best. So he said this. So this is what he did. At the closing meeting, you know, they're all sitting there in the big, with the mahogany tables, with all the lawyers and the accountants and the surveyors, everyone's signing papers and shuffling them around. So just before they're about to finally hand over the checks and the deal, whatever, wire the money, so the lawyer for the seller, for the vendor, stands up and says, my client would like to hand over this memorandum before the sale goes through. So what's this? The buyer picks it up, and written on this memorandum says, I wish to inform the purchaser that there is a crack in the basement of this property which floods on a regular basis, and I wish the purchaser to be in full knowledge of this before they buy the property. I've seen this before. Like, this is, who would ever do such a thing? Caveat emptor. Why would they do this? So he came over to the guy and said, what is this? So he said, well, look, you know, I'm an Orthodox Jew, and I there's a system called halakha, and I'm trying to keep it well, and my rabbi has told me that this is what I have to do. So they go and speak to the lawyers, and they come back 5 minutes later, and they say, well, if you're an Orthodox Jew, why didn't you tell me this before I exchanged contracts? He said, well, it's funny because a few weeks ago I didn't actually know this law, but I went to a class and I was taught this law, and now now that I know it, I want to come clean. So I went away. 3 minutes later, he came back, and the guy said to him, he said, you Jews are all the same. He says, what?
Right.
He says, I know your game. You're trying to get me to pull out because someone's made a higher offer. So he said, I'm going to sign this deal, away with it, sign the deal, and I don't know the end of the story. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will be dealing with the issue of Kibud Av V'Em.